There's a new era and I'm not part of it. Right. And that's kind of how that's a little bit how I feel when I see this. And I don't, how do you feel when you see this, and how do you intend to kind of like get your hands, you know, we're a bunch of scheming, greedy, you know, horrible people. How are you going to get your hands on this? How are you going to get your stick and paws in this game?
Okay, this is the AI episode. It's all AI. Everything is AI. I was mind blown. I would say that's the right word. Like, to me, this is the biggest holy shit moment I've had when it's come to when it comes to technology, of seeing what's going on in AI. For you, you got emotional, which is a strange response.
I think I'm more emotional than you are. I think I get touched more than you do. let me give the background really quick. So it's a company called Play.ht. And one of their side projects is a thing called Podcast.ai. And basically what they did was they gave their AI algorithm or program, whatever you want to call it, they gave their program Steve Jobs's biography, which is, and I think they actually gave him one or two of his biographies, because there's two major ones. Then they basically gave the program every single Steve Jobs recording, I think ever, or any that they could find on the internet, along with every Joe Rogan episode ever. And they made Joe Rogan interview Steve Jobs. And in the interview, it's like 25 minutes long. They talk all about all types of stuff, but they say some amazing things. Like, Joe Rogan does the intro and he goes, like, he teases out who it is, just like he does in real life. He goes, "What's up, freak bitches?" Which I don't even think he says anymore, but he said that in all the early episodes. He goes, "What's up, freak bitches? Today's guest is someone who's incredibly smart, incredibly weird."
We should just play it, right? Let it
insufferable. Well, he says insufferable, which I thought was crazy. So go ahead. Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Play.ht. All content is generated by artificial
weird
intelligence.
Weird voice choice for this part.
Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, freak bitches. Welcome to another episode of the Bro Jogan Experience. And on this episode, I welcome my friend who's difficult to describe. I'm fascinated by him, and I hope you'll be too. And he is weird and brilliant and sometimes totally insufferable. But my guest today has made some of the great technological products of our age, and he's always pushing the envelope in innovation. Like, for example, with his next computer, he developed a new programming language and operating system, and then he became even more famous for making three applications for that computer: a word processor, a spreadsheet, and an image editor. That just showed me that this dude was brilliant, had amazing taste, and I would just hope that I could be even like 1/10 of the genius that my friend today is. And I can't even say his name, so yeah. So super psyched about having him in the house today. First time, or yeah, we've had you on before, but not for a long time. You're like Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore and Ghost. You're a memory from the past. So without further ado, my friend who is difficult to describe and wonderful, and I'm so grateful he came on the show.
How's it going? Good to see you, buddy. It's been a long time since I've been on the show. I've missed this. It's always fun.
Wow. Like, just pause there. Okay. So the things that, like, first, the voice quality is incredible. Like, that sounds just like Joe Rogan. It sounds just like Steve Jobs. It has gotten so much better than like how this used to be. I remember, like, you know, when you had like the Garmin GPS in your car and you could like choose the Morgan Freeman voice or whatever. Like, anytime you'd have like this voice robot that was trying to say something new, it sounded totally computerized, and this doesn't. So the voice quality is one thing.
All right, a quick message from our sponsor, which is, of course, HubSpot. Now look, growing a business is tough, and it's tough because a lot of times you have to duct tape a ton of software together to make it work. I've been there, and it's a pain in the butt. You have this thing connecting to that thing, and the two things that are being connected, one of them breaks, or the thing connecting them doesn't work, and it's a mess. You have all these moving parts, and it's just a pain in the butt because you don't know where the single source of truth is. And that's where HubSpot's customer platform comes into play. Finally, you've got this single source of truth where everything is organized and tracked in one place. For example, if you have customers emailing you, they've got really easy ways to see who on your team is replying to which customer, what they're saying, and things like that. And you can track it all in one place. They also have a lot of AI-supported stuff, which means that you can automatically know which type of messaging you need to send to that type of customer. And yes, it sounds natural, like a real person. I actually use it. I use it with my company, Hampton, and it works wonderfully. And when leads come in, you know which channel they came through, you know who's going to follow up with them, and it's all seamless and easy. So if you're interested, it's simple. Go to HubSpot.com and check it out and see how you can use it to grow your business.
The fact that it kind of like, it makes more sense than it should. Like, he's doing an intro. It understands that. He's teasing, like, this my friend who's here today, this person's a genius, but not saying who it is and what it is right away. That's like a showmanship thing that I thought was like really interesting. The back and forth banter, like he gives that long intro and then Steve Jobs just kind of laughs, like you would if you had sat down for this kind of interview with Joe Rogan. I just thought that was incredible, the way it felt like a real conversation. And obviously there's some stuff that's like, you know, he's talking about word processors and documents and a little too much. Like, nobody would do that. But like, damn, if 80% of that is not amazing.
And the reason I felt emotional listening to this was I felt both like in awe, but also scared, because as I was listening to this, I was agreeing with what Steve says. And what we'll do in a second, Ben, is fast forward like maybe 10 minutes in, and basically Jobs goes on this long rant about LSD, saying, you know, LSD changed my life. And I don't think it's for everyone, but it changed my life. And it opened my mind up and let me read all these books I never previously would have read. And he says something like, I wouldn't take LSD a bunch of times in a row because I only needed it once or twice. And it opened my mind and it introduced me. And he goes in depth. He goes, it introduced me to India. And it's just...
He's talking about God. He's talking about like all kinds of things that you're like, it's not just like reading a Wikipedia page. You know what I mean? Like, it's very philosophical. He's like, when people think about God, they think about this. But to me, it's like, well, that's a fully formed thought and philosophy. And like, that sounds like something somebody would say when they're having like an in-depth podcast, and not just like, I did this in 1979 in March, when I was living in Albuquerque. And then in 1981, I once again, it wasn't that. It was like a very real sounding thing.
And he has this amazing... Did you hear? There's this beautiful quote that he says. And basically the way that this company, if you ever listen to a bunch of Steve Jobs interviews, you'll notice that at points, it almost sounds like they're just chopping up some of his clips and just weaving them together, because he has talked about this before. So I don't actually know if he's ever said this particular line before, but he starts talking about India and why he loves like that part of the world. And he basically says like, well, it's so old and it influenced the rest of society. And he goes, there's an Indian epic that's 10 times as long as the Bible, the Quran, and all these other things
combined. The
Iliad
and the Odyssey, yeah.
That's what he says. Yeah, he's like, basically, Indian history influenced the rest of the world. And there's an epic that's 10 times as long as all these other books. And I just thought that's just like such an interesting...
By the way, he doesn't say the name, so it kind of leaves you wanting there. But he is talking about the Gita, which is like, I think, that long. It's like a 16-part series or whatever. It's like this really, really long thing. I would bet that it actually is multiples longer than the Iliad and the Odyssey. So I don't think it was interesting
that he said that. And this is the point, is that when he said that, I said, I got to find that book. Like, he just sold me on this book.
He influenced you.
Yeah, the dead Jobs influenced me. So Ben, click play just for like 30 seconds.
But there is some kind of deeper meaning to life. And it can't just be something that somebody made up, because if it was, it wouldn't be compelling. It would seem contrived and everyone would see through it. So I think that the meaning and the purpose is by the cosmos, the nature of the cosmos, which is pretty bold thinking. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, but it's not religious in the way people usually talk about. Taking LSD was a profound experience for me. LSD shows you that there's another side to the coin, and you can't remember it when it wears off, but you know, it washes over you and tells you that everything is connected. You're not here by accident. You were put here for a purpose. And if you can figure out what that is, then you'll learn more about yourself than anything else could. It's pretty intense.
So that quote is a real quote of his. Taking LSD was a profound experience, one of the most important things in my life. It shows you that there's another side of the coin. You can't remember it when it wears off, but you know it. Okay, so that is like an actual quote of his, but it's weaved into the conversation. Like, there's a part in the conversation where he says, he's talking about how he's a fan of Joe Rogan. He's like, it's nice to just sit back in the car and listen to you rant. And it's like, okay, so the first one where he's the LSD, you know, okay, they just took you know, his Goodreads section or his quotes, and they're like, okay, cool. He says things like this. But how did it know to say to Joe Rogan that I love to listen to your podcast in the car, just love to sit back and listen to your rant? Where would that have come from? How does that happen? That is, there's like little moments like that that are like, I just don't understand this technology well enough to know how it could know to say something like that in that moment.
So the first half of the call, he talks all about India and these like kind of platitude, like life advice type of things, which were pretty amazing. But then the second half, which Ben just started playing a little bit, he talks about Google, and they actually say Yahoo wrong. They call it Yahoo. they put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. But he says all these interesting quotes, which I actually think are things that he said again in the past. But he says stuff like, you know, that's the problem I've always had with Microsoft. In many ways, they're smart people and they've done good work, but they've never had any taste. They've never had any aesthetic taste. And then he goes on and he talks about Adobe, and he criticizes Adobe's business model. And he goes, Joe Rogan actually says, what would you do to fix Adobe? And Jobs says, well, they've got 800 people working on Adobe's business model. That's just way too many people. And the fact that they charge just a little bit of money for a small bit of the product, it's like buying a car, but only getting part of the car and having to pay more money to get the rest of the engine. And he like says these criticisms about Adobe, which frankly, I have no idea if it's true, but he must have went on like a rant about this, you know, in the past. But and then he goes, you know, I had a lunch recently with Bob whatever at Adobe, and he like says their full name, and he leads up this part of Adobe, and he actually agreed with me that they need to fix it and they're working on fixing it. And so anyway, he like actually gives almost more advice and his opinions on what I think are current events. I'm not well versed enough with Adobe, but it seems like current events. It's pretty magical.
It's amazing. This basically was like bring back someone from the dead technology. Ben, do you have anything to add? You're a history guy. What did this like? Do you have anything that you felt when you watched this?
I really agree with Sam. It made me oddly emotional listening to it. It also scared me a little bit just because I thought of the application of like, well, what if like you did this to my grandpa, and like what emotions would that bring back? And then that like frightened me of like, oh, I don't know if that's a good thing to be able to experience like as a representation of my grandpa that would feel like the real thing, but isn't, right? Like, where are these thoughts coming from? So it's equal parts, like really compelling, really cool. It's like a treat to be able to hear what I think is like a pretty accurate representation of how Steve Jobs would approach some of these things that are happening today. But then also just like scary to realize, but it's not really him. And what is it really?
Well, it's like a video, right? Today you could watch a home video and it's like, you see their face, you hear their voice, it's captured a moment in time. To me, this is an extension of that, which is like, now it's going to be somewhat interactive, that you can kind of interact with these people or hear them talk about new things. And you know that it's not like the real thing, but it's, you know, there's a Black Mirror episode that's a lot like this, where the woman like uploads her boyfriend's consciousness to like, you know, this robot. And she's kind of still dating him, even though, you know, he's gone. But like, there's like the shadow of him that like, you know, can simulate him. And I think there's more good than bad. Sam, what do you want to say?
Yeah, so let me add 2 points about why this is going to get even stranger. Well, the first point is almost scary. So basically, in 1985, here, this is a quote from Steve Jobs. He goes, "My hope is someday, when the next Aristotle is alive, we can capture the underlying worldview of that Aristotle in a computer. And someday, some student will not be only be able to read the words Aristotle wrote, but ask Aristotle a question and get an answer." And so Steve Jobs wrote that in 85, which is interesting. Now, here's where things get really interesting.
Chills from that, because what he just described is what just happened to him.
It's magical. Now, here's where things are going to get even more magical. So play.ai or play.ht?
HT, I want to. Yeah.
Part of their website, you can actually vote for new episodes. And some of the top episodes that people have voted for is Elon Musk interviewing Nikola Tesla, Kanye West and Bob Marley talking about music, Jesus interviews God. And then I believe there's Einstein and Buddha having a conversation on science and spirituality.
Trump interviews himself.
Trump interviews himself. There's Lex Friedman interviewing Richard Feynman. And then there's Joe Rogan mediates peace between Russia and U.S. And that sounds like a joke. And it is a joke. But it's actually an interesting tool where you're like, well, like, let's hear Joe Rogan. Let's see if Joe Rogan can, like, bring together these two different people and hear each other's perspective. And we'll actually find out where one another is coming from, even if it's make-believe. And but it will still be like maybe that is actually how they feel. And I could work through this argument. So that's why this stuff is actually really, really interesting and powerful.
So let's switch gears. I want to give you my kind of like big picture framework on how I think about AI. So I was having lunch with this guy who has built this AI app. He built one app called, I think Wombo is the name of it. It had like 100 million downloads. It basically could take a picture of you and make you like, make it look like you're singing. And then they got copied a bunch. It got taken out of the app store because of music problems. And then like,
I saw that.
Now he has another one, which is basically like one of these text to image creators on mobile. And it's like really popular. And he started saying this thing and I kind of remixed what he was saying. And here's kind of like how, here's where we landed with like what's going on with AI. So the last, I don't know, 10 years have been what I'll call left brain AI. And like, you know, you have your left brain and your right brain. Left brain is your analytical brain. And that's what artificial intelligence could do. You had big data, you had machine learning, you had, you know, the computer can play chess and it's amazing. The computer can play Go and it's amazing. It beats the best players in the world. You had self-driving cars where a car is taking in sensor data, camera data, and it's basically processing it and trying to make decisions like a human being using analytical decision-making processes. It's trying to make the right judgment at the right time to maximize safety. And so that's what, I think that's where we've been. And it's also in a way what we expected. That sounds like the type of thing that supercomputer should be able to do is like, hey, computer, you know, just like you can multiply huge numbers and I can't do that in my head, you know, you should be able to drive perfectly every time. You should be able to play chess better than a human. Like, great, I get that stuff. And then was this game changer where it changed into right brain AI. Your right brain is your creative brain, right? So this is where you got GPT-3, which is what generates text, like, you know, what we just talked about with the Joe Rogan thing. So you can just give it a prompt and it'll just write an essay for you. It'll be creative. It can write rap lyrics for you. And that's where you got DALL-E, which is art. So you could just say, give me a picture of a starry night, but with it takes place in Hogwarts, and it'll just generate images that like create that scene. It'll paint pictures for you. And so, you know, all of a sudden the artists are looking at this saying, wait a minute. It was fine when you were just messing with chess, but now you're holding the paintbrush. What's going on here? And then you have that, you know, what we just played, you know, Play HT or Unreal Speech. They're doing this for audio. Like, how do you generate audio, whether that's music, whether that's podcast? It's just creating it from scratch. And, you know, like, here's podcasters like us that wake up and we sit at our microphone and we have to come up with this content. But now the machines are doing it, too. And so we're competing with that. And then you have people doing this with video. There's a company called Runway that's doing this where you could just describe a video like walking through the streets of Tokyo and it's really busy. And then it creates that scene. And you go, can you add some rain? And then it adds rain.
What's that called?
Runway ML.
Can so I ben, go on ben, right now up, and just use it?
Ben, pull up the demo for Runway ML. I don't know if it's like launched yet, but they put out a sick demo of what I just described. And so now you got this right brain AI that's doing creative shit. Creative images, creative text, creative videos. It's writing blog posts. It's writing essays. It's making paintings. It's making patterns. It's making music. It's making podcasts. It's making videos. And so now it's doing both sides. And that's the big change that's happened. And that's the big holy shit moment. In the same way that NFTs brought a whole bunch of people into crypto who, you know, crypto, when it was just cryptography or it was just finance, there was a certain set of people that were interested. Then NFTs came out and it was like, oh, cool. There's a whole art angle, you know, like celebrity access. It brought a new audience in. This is that on steroids, where the new AI stuff that's creative and is creating art and creating music and creating audio and creating text, that's bringing in a whole new wave of people beyond just people who were interested in a chess bot or a alpha, you know, the Alpha Zero bot that plays Go. You know, those were kind of limited to like just the nerds. Now we got the nerds and the artists both in the mix. That's my framework for what's going on with AI. And the next 10 years, I think, are this like right brain side taking over.
And this, is that it? What is that?
Yeah, so let's see.
Oh my God.
Like, it's like, make it feel more romantic. Add a, remove the, you just highlight an object. And it's like, remove this. I don't want this in the video. And it just removes the street lamp. And then it's like, make a lush garden. Make it look like it was hand drawn. Make it look like a jungle where there's whatever going on.
Wow. So
right? like that last thing it just did is so crazy. It just, you dropped a video in and it goes green screen the character and it's a guy walking around and it just like immediately removes the background. And then it says add a sunny sky and it adds a sunny sky. Then it says blur the sun a little bit, blur the background a little bit, and it blurs the background while this guy's like skateboarding or whatever. Like, that's crazy that it could do that. You know, and now obviously, you know, a demo is generally like massive overpromise for what the tech can actually do.
Yeah, but it's, but we still can all see it. We can all see that, like, yeah, if they're not doing it now, like it's reasonable that in the near term of 10 years, like this, right, is going to be normal. And
add 2 inches to that guy's neck beard and this is done.
Like, yeah. We're measuring timelines by hair growth. This is one of those things, and it doesn't happen often, where you see something and you say to yourself, it's not there yet, but it will be. And it's right, almost like where you like test. It's almost like when I was in a Tesla for the first time and it was like a practical car that also went 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, even though the range wasn't good and like this other thing wasn't good. But I get into it and I'm like, oh, well, yeah, like in 10 years, this is just the norm. This will be normal. Right. And those types
of
things.
It's like puberty. It's like there's a bunch of changes happening. The voice is changing, but it still cracks. And you're like, all right, it doesn't sound great yet, but it'll get there.
Yeah. And this is one of those things. And it's pretty magical when you see it. And like a really some seemingly basic, but actually quite profound ways that this is going to impact thing. I mean, it's basically, it's almost like, I don't know if you know anything about music, but like I was listening to this documentary on Nirvana and Dave Grohl was talking about his newest album. He's going to use analog, like, which is like tape recording. He's going to like record it like with them all in one room. But because he's like with Pro Tools, like, you know, it's the technology, it's the recording technology they use. It's called Pro Tools. It's kind of like Photoshop, but for music. And he was like, we could record all this music and like, we only got to do it one time. And then we can like drag and drop different stuff. And we make like the sound perfect. Like the every snare is like exactly on the beat that it should be. And it's perfect. And he's like, we kind of wanted it to be a little sloppier and to feel more human because Pro Tools has made this stuff perfect. And that's an example of what's going to happen. And like some really mundane but interesting examples are basically, you know, have you ever done like sale, like high ticket sales where you're trying to sell software or some type of service that requires tons of back and forth on email of you like cold emailing someone and then like them saying like, oh, well, this is kind of interesting, but we need this, this and this. And then you have to like reply back.
Sure.
That costs so much money worth of people. You got to train people on the right things to say. You've got to give them documentation on all the right things to say. Then you got to like add in like the wow factor of like, can you like flirt with them the right way? And can you like play this game the right way? Like that shit, like reasonably, it's reasonable to see that that will all be automated in the near term. Like a call right. center won't be a thing. There's going to be like your AI call center or whatever we want to call it, your operations hub. And then there's going to be like, just in case that doesn't work, we'll have a couple people there.
Right. Well, one of the companies I invested in is called Infinitus. And the funny thing that they did was they're like, oh man, doctors spend so much time in their back office, like just trying to do billing with insurance. So you'll call up. Basically, you know, patient gives you information for insurance. You then have to call the insurance company and you have to verify the name and the number. And then you have to get it like, here's the reference code for what treatment they had or whatever, right? All this back and forth. And most entrepreneurs' solution was like, oh, this is so much back and forth. We need to eliminate this and rechange the system from scratch. And what these guys did was way smarter. They were like, oh, why don't we just save the doctors a ton of time? Let's make a robot that calls their robot. And so they created a robot that will call you know, whoever, insurance provider's robot. And the insurance provider was like, please enter the patient's identification number. And then the robot goes, 924336. It's like, thank you for your patience, robot. And it's like, please say if you want number one. And then the robot has infinite patience to just do the whole call by itself. And it saves doctors a ton of time. They're doing really, really well. Let me give you...
we have to talk about interior AI.
Yeah. So let's do a couple other examples. So here's another one where, you know, Peter Levels, who came on the pod, you know, massive fan favorite. This guy's got like a killer following. And one of the reasons why is because he loves to just hack together and make stuff. I think when you were looking at his thing, you called him You called him an artist in that way too. You're like,
yeah,
I forgot your description of him, but you're like, you're a, I can't remember. It was something like you called him basically like a code artist or something like that.
Well, I don't know, remember what I called him, but to me, he's like a craftsman, you know, like he's like a punk rocker who like, he's like a musician who just, instead of playing on a musical keyboard, he's playing on a computer keyboard, and he's pretty magical. He's a pretty magical like creator, I think.
Yeah. There's definitely an element of punk to him where he's like, for example, he's like, I don't do email or phone calls ever. If you have a question for me, here's a frequently asked question thing. Like, why? Because I like to just work on my shit, and then I like to go swimming. And like, those are the things I want to do, right? And he's like, you know, I don't want to live in one place. I'm going to just move around and like be a nomad. And I think that's cool. And he did that before remote work was popular. So
explain what
thing.
This is. He's been building it publicly on Twitter for a while now, about 3 or 4 months, maybe.
So, no, not even, dude, like a couple weeks. So he created this thing. It's interior AI, like interior design. And what you do is you could basically upload a photo of any space and you say what it is. You drag and drop a photo of a space. By the way, I want to create a YouTube video that does all these demos live one by one. But like you upload a space and then you say what type of room it is. You say what type of style you want. Like, do you want ski chalet? Do you want tropical? Do you want like minimalist? Do you want a maximalist look? And then you say how many versions you want, and then you click render my idea. And it just creates, like an interior designer would, a super realistic, like go to his Twitter and just look at his like demos there, Ben. It generates like a super realistic looking interior. So he took, like, for example, Kim Kardashian's house, and he took the photo from their like living room, and then he uploaded, he said, like, you know, give me some inspiration. And it turned it into like a hot spring. Like, it turned it into like a whole different like thing and it all together. But it's really amazing. And it's like, yeah, here's all the stuff you would need to make your house look like this. Do you like this look? Nope. You want a new one? Push a button, get another one. Push a button, get another one. Push another one, and which is what you were saying. That would be so much back and forth with a human being. You would sit down for design meetings, and then they would create a lookbook, and then you'd give your feedback, and then they would, you know, maybe give you a rendering, but that takes time and energy on their part. And then you'd say no, and then you'd have to go back and forth. Here, you just push buttons and you just immediately get this like dream. It's like you just get to dream out loud, and like you're just dreaming, and it's just generating images of, like, you know, that for you to kind of like remix off of, which is a totally different creative process. Like, that cuts so much friction out of the creative process that even somebody like me who doesn't have design taste, this is A, the superpower to give you design taste, but B, it takes all the friction out, so you don't have the impatience, right? Okay, look at this one. Yeah, go back and forth to this. So it's this crappy warehouse like space, just empty. I don't know, Sam, like describe what you're
it's
looking
like,
at
it's,
here.
So this is clearly an old factory that someone's trying to turn into an apartment. So it's an industrial style 1,000 to 2,000 square foot room that looks beautiful, but is too rustic to live in and entirely empty. And he says, I found an original empty loft photo. I wanted to add interior decorating that was industrial style, and I wanted to auto detect different parts around the building. So it looks like there's like a pillar in the middle of the room. So he said, I wanted to decorate around that. And he said, all right, go ahead, interior AI, do it. And let's look at the next picture.
And then it turns it into this like modern looking loft. It's the same place. And then it replaces the floor, and then it does this and it does that. Like, and you could, I think there's another version that it creates, like multiple versions of it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, some of these are a little outlandish. Like this one's crazy, right? They have, like, replaced the roof with like bamboo, and like you could see through the roof now. So, you know, some of this is not super realistic. But you said something earlier that I think is worth noting, which is, it's not perfect, and there's like definitely some weird stuff that it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. But you have to see through that right now because that stuff's going to get better. And there's this great blog post from back in the day by this guy, Paul Buchheit, who created Gmail when he was inside Google. And then the blog post is called, "If you're great, you don't have to be good," which honestly is kind of the motto of my life, right? Like, Sam, do I show up late to this podcast? Yeah, I do. Am I wearing my boxers right now? Yeah, I am. Did I prepare for this podcast? Not fully. But if you're great, you don't have to be good. And like, that's true. He's like, you know, with Gmail, people were like, oh my God, it doesn't have this. And it doesn't have a contact book. And it doesn't have this. He's like, yeah, but look, it's lightning fast, has unlimited storage. And the search is amazing. You can find any file and any email instantly. And he's like, when you're great, you don't have to be good. He's like, the iPad, people were like, oh my God, it doesn't have a keyboard. It doesn't have a USB port. It doesn't have this. It doesn't have that. He's like, yeah, but watch this. You tap a button and it like instantly is on. It doesn't have like a boot up process. And like you swipe and you're on the internet and it just lets you browse the internet from your like your couch, you know, where you're on the go, where you don't have your laptop or you don't have your desktop computer. He's like, so when you're great, you don't have to be good. And he had released that when the iPad came out. He's like, look, the iPad just got released. All these critics are saying how that's a huge flop. I think they're wrong because they're making this mistake. They want things to be good everywhere. You just need to be great in like three things that matter and everything else can be kind of sucky and it'll still win. And he was absolutely right about the iPad.
Are you, so let's talk about opinions a little bit. Where's your head at with all this? I mean, when I see this, I think I am not capable. Like I don't have the ability to work on this. I simply don't have the horsepower. And like, I appreciate it, but
I got upstairs. Only, yeah, it's more of a go-kart.
Yeah. I'm F1. Definitely. Well, I'm like, I'm very much either going to be a spectator or a only semi active person in this game. Like, you know, you made a funny joke when we were talking, you and I, so Sean and I are obsessed with TikTok. So we watch TikTok constantly and we made a joke or Sean made a joke. He goes, we're content creators in the same way that a horse carriage person in 1912, and they just saw Henry Ford drive by on his car.
Yeah, like, that's kind of like what we are. And you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
Yeah. Like,
I feel like I watch TikToks.
Yeah. I see an 18-year-old with Vans who like makes this like spectacular like video of, and it's just the funniest thing ever. And I'm like, oh, there's a new era and I'm not part of it. Right, and that's kind exactly. of how that's a little bit how I feel when I see this. And I don't know, how do you feel when you see this and how do you intend to kind of like get your hands, you know, we're a bunch of scheming, greedy, you know, horrible guns. People. How are you going to get your hands on this? How are you going to get your stick and paws in this game?
Well, that's a great question. It's a question I've been asking myself. I'm a little bit different than you in that I have a little more self-delusion where I'm like, I could do this. You know, if I hired the right people, you know, I could be the vision guy. Yeah. I'll be the vision guy. And like, you know, I'll have the idea and then all these geniuses will just make it happen.
Well, because you previously had a company that was I would tell my parents I had a tech company, but it was really just an email newsletter. It wasn't a tech company. You actually had a proper technology business.
Right. Yeah. You were just basically like writing brochures. And whereas I was running a Silicon Valley enterprise.
I'm like a restaurant who has an online ordering menu, calling themselves a tech company.
Yeah, exactly. The next Google.
Yeah.
I'm used to working with people that are way smarter than me. And I like go over to I roll my chair over to their screen and they're just like, what do you want? I'm like, hey, bud, can you do that thing again where you made the thing like bounce during the animation? Like that was so cool. I want to just like upload this to my Twitter. Can you do it again? And they're like, oh yeah, sure. So I'm used to working with designers, engineers that are way talented. So I kind of look at it as following. My plan is this: invest in everything, because investing is easy and great, right? Like I'm a believer in this wave. I'm excited about this. And I think that I can help because a lot of the people who can build this stuff, they don't know A, where to apply it. Like what's the actual pain point I should be solving? And B, they don't know how to like build maybe a defensible business or a go-to-market strategy that might make sense for them. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to invest in a bunch of these companies. That's plan A. That's already in motion.
Would you say that this is the most interesting sector?
For sure. And I kind of feel like an idiot because it's like, oh, cool. Now you're interested in the new thing. And it's like, on one hand, I get that, you know, oh, crypto.
You are in fact a dumb idiot who chases.
Yeah, I just chased the next shiny object. And there's some truth to that. Like crypto was the more crypto prices went up, the more I invested and the more, you know, then I created the Milk Road and like that, you know, I turned my content attention to it. So, you know, it's like that meme. It's like, you know, the guy who looks back at the new thing that's like, you know, the hot thing behind it. It's like, yeah, AI is that new thing. But at the same time, what am I supposed to do? I just saw a fucking flying object. I just saw a UFO. What am I supposed to do? Pretend I'm not interested? Like, no, I'm super interested. Like, you know, count me in, like beam me up and, you know, have your way with me, aliens. That's how I feel about AI.
Did I ever tell you the time that in our office there was a porn studio across the street that would leave their windows open?
No.
So at my office in San Francisco was at Bush and Kearney in the financial district of San Francisco. And we were on maybe the fifth floor. And there used to be this company called Breather. And it was almost like Airbnb, but for office space, maybe like WeWork, where they would like pre-rent tons of like one single small rooms.
A meeting room.
Yeah, meeting room. And then you could rent it by the hour. And we had these huge, beautiful windows at our office. And you could see across the street, which was only 20 yards, you know, just the size of a small street. And you could see across where this other room was. And eventually, this softcore porn company started renting it. It was a Breather, and they would rent it by the hour. And I think it was for OnlyFans. I think it was where a freelance photographer who specialized in like webcam girls or something like that. And they would come and take like their portfolio pictures. And they would always come at like 2 days a week at like 2 o'clock, and they would get completely naked and they would just be there taking pictures. And I had this woman working for me named Edie, who's probably 65. And her and I sat next to each other. And I remember like it happening. And I'd be like, yeah, they're there again today. And like, you can't not look. And Edie's like hardcore Catholic. And she used to like do the
Edie,
sign of the cross.
Earmuffs, they're here.
Yeah. She would do like the sign of the cross and like start holding on to her like rosary whenever they would come in. And she would like, oh, gee, like she would say like, oh, baby Jesus, like, you know, dear.
And you were saying
dear
the same
Peter,
thing, but for different reasons.
Yeah, for different reasons. She was more so in like, wow. I was more like, wow. Yeah. It was one of those things where I remember sitting there and our office was like six young men and then like Edie. And this like porn was just not porn, but this nude photography was just happening right there. And we just like had to stare at it all day. And I remember it being so challenging to work when that was happening. That's sort of like AI. That's my long tangent.
Yeah, I was like, where's he going with this? Okay, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. That is
you
how did, I
you
feel.
Don't remember that? You were never there when the they got naked?
No, I never saw that. But, you know, thanks You're for lost. Not inviting me. yeah, that is how I feel about this, where I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Not look, Edie? I'm looking, and, you know, I'm looking as long as they're there. That's how I feel about AI. So I'm going to invest in this stuff. I'm going to keep learning about it. And then who knows, maybe start a company in this space. You know, it's pretty exciting.
Would you really?
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, like, this is like a...
It is exciting.
It's an unlock. It's like, oh, we got new toys to play with. Like, I can't leave them in the box. Like, I got to unbox it and see what I could do with it. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens with this. But let me give you a couple other kind of mind-blowing, you know, examples here. So, okay. So another one is Jasper. So I just invested in this company called Jasper. Jasper AI.
Dude, the valuation was steep. I'm shocked you did it.
Yeah, the revenue curve is also steep. It's working really well. And now I went in and I told him this. I go, your numbers are insane. This might be fraud. That's okay. You know, we'll see. I don't think it's fraud, but like the numbers are so impressive that it's like, you know, when you say, wow, that's unbelievable. There's a part of you that's like, is this believable? So, you know, there's that. And I said, the other thing is, you know, sometimes these companies, they get off to really hot starts. They don't necessarily sustain. Like sometimes that explosive growth can
like
make
Groupon.
You, but it can also break you. Groupon, you know, during COVID, Hopin was an example of this, where Hopin was like, you know, started and then it was like the perfect thing at the perfect time. And it just took off like a rocket ship and it became worth $5 billion. And then now there's like, they just laid off like whatever, 1,000 people because COVID ended, the demand went down, they couldn't sustain that sales growth. They had forecasted that they'll always keep growing like a rocket and maybe that didn't happen. So, you know,
and by the way, the founder took $100 million in secondary.
Yeah, you know, just had to secure the bag for his family, right? he's like, I got kids.
He don't, but good for him.
I'm gonna have kids. I better get this bag.
I'm gonna use that excuse all the time, regardless of if I got kids. Dude, I got kids to feed. I got a family.
Right. I am such a good uncle. Okay, so check out this demo of what Jasper can do. So basically, I teach like a writing course called Power Writing, and my whole goal is like, hey, if you're going to write something on your website or an email or your Twitter bio, or you want to write content for blogs, like you're either going to write it and no one's going to read it. It's going to go nowhere. It's going to drive no results, no clicks, no signups, no followers, or it's going to like actually like achieve the thing. So it's like a genie, right? You say what you want and you just give it like a little guidance, like make it funny. I want an ad that's going to like promote my gym. It's called Crunch. We have this welcome offer where you get it for $20, make it funny. And I want it as a Facebook ad. And then I want it as a cold email. And then just and you're like, give me 10 options. And it gives you 10 options. And then you could just like edit them or whatever, or you can literally highlight it and just say, rephrase this. I didn't like this intro. Give me a new one. And it'll just give you a new one. You're like, give it another one. And it's like, gives you another one. I mean, it's like the best employee that's like creative, super prompt, just immediately delivers the thing you want. It's kind of like amazing. So like watch another 30 seconds. This is like the boss mode version.
Access to documents. Now I want you to imagine documents. It's kind of like Google Docs. If you had an assistant in there and you're the boss giving your assistant instructions on how to do stuff. Now for our first example, imagine a real estate agent who has a lot of outbound sales emails to send out this week. And he wants to save some time by using his AI assistant, Jasper. Now, you're probably getting a hang of this by now. On the left, we give Jasper some context of our situation, any background information we need, along with tone of voice and keywords. And then on the right, we can supply a pattern so Jasper can follow that because Jasper's really good at following patterns and apply that with all of the information it knows from the internet. So here, we just provided a really good example of what good behavior would look like. And then we provided some merge tags, empty little slots that we want Jasper to fill in. In our situation, the real estate agent's Dave, client's James, market's Austin, Texas. It's the new year season. Demand is up, inventory is down, and we want them to hop on a call. So now we're going to write with AI. We're going to do a Jasper command. Remember that feature for later, okay? Now, what we're going to do is activate voice mode. Hey, Jasper, write an email from Dave to James about an update on the Austin, Texas real estate market and ask for a call later this week. All right, we're submitting that command. Imagine if you're the boss and Jasper's your assistant. Now, he's following your directions. Look at that. It's perfect. You can go ahead and ship it. Imagine all the sales emails you could send
if it were just
So isn't that crazy? So that's why these guys are taking off, because they basically say, you know, where you had employees, you no longer need employees. Or if you had a good employee, they can now be 10 times more productive when they do this. You know, so this is like kind of mind-blowing on the like text generation for business side of things.
This is crazy.
Let me tell you like absolutely crazy. Another wild example.
Are you going to use this for your business?
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So I'm using it. I just started using this for ours.
And what are you like, just using playing it with for? It.
Well, two things. One is I'm going to try to use it when we do our power writing course. I'm going to teach people how to use this, but also use it in the like kind of the sales process. But like with our e-com thing, I want to try it even with Milk Road. There's cases where maybe our writers can be more productive if we give them this tool. For example, every day at the Milk Road, we start with an opener that's like, you know, hey, what's up? This is the Milk Road, the crypto newsletter that brings you news so fresh, you'll think it's, you know, news so fresh, it'll smell like laundry straight out of the dryer. I love that smell. And it's like, that's what we, like I just made that up off the top of my head. But you give it three of those, and then we could just tell Jasper, generate, and it'll generate like 500 clever openers like that, which is great, because that's like one thing our writers every day have to come up with a cool new one. And like, you know, it takes like, you know, a little mental energy to do that. And it's not the easiest thing, but now they can get better doing things like that. Let me give you a wild example. So go to, I don't know where this is going to be. I don't know if they have a website.
Carter and how AI. How are they any different than Copy AI? Because that I invested in Copy AI and they do the
same thing. They're kind of the same thing. Just imagine Copy AI with more revenue. No offense to Capier. Those guys are cool.
It's kind of like LeBron James, just not good.
Yeah. What's the difference between me and LeBron? Just imagine me taller, faster, stronger, more handsome, more successful, and richer.
I've been an investor in Copy AI. I love those guys. Paul is the founder who I invested in. They're at $10 million in revenue.
Yeah,
it looks
like
they're actually quite similar, but I think they're geared towards a different user. But yeah, I would have to dig deeper into Jasper to truly understand. But anyway, go ahead.
So here's other examples of things that I think are amazing. So the same thing, the way this just helped a content marketer or a salesperson generate text for their emails and blog posts, like this thing will write whole blog posts for you. And by the way, you can write a blog post and then you click the SEO button and it'll score how SEO friendly this is and how much it thinks it's going to drive for you, right? So that's pretty smart to like link these things together. Because on the surface, what are all these companies doing? They're just using basically the same sort of like GPT-3 engine. So on one hand, these companies are not very defensible because anybody could take these open source language models and build a user interface on top of it. And so like I can create another competitor to Copy AI or Jasper or one of these kind of things, but it's all in the user interface, the applications, and how much like business utility you add to it. So let me give you another example of business utility. So this is now in the photography use case. So for example, for my e-commerce brand, we spend a lot of money every month, maybe something like $5,000 to $10,000 a month easily on photography. So you have to take pictures of your products. You have to take model photos. So you have to do castings and then book models. Then they come to your studio and then they use your products or whatever. And then you take photos or videos of that. You use that for your website. You use that for your ads, that sort of thing. And so that whole process takes like multiple people, right? You got a photographer, you might have a casting person, you have an editor maybe. It takes time. So like, we can't just have it instantaneously. Like you have to schedule these things. They take weeks. They don't always turn out good. Like maybe you have somebody that doesn't, it didn't turn out, you know, the shot didn't turn out how you wanted it, whatever. So check out Dream Booth. So Dream Booth, let me give you the link for this. So there's two here, Osmosis AI and Dream Booth, but try, let me give you this link. So this guy, this guy, I think works at Shopify, if I'm correct. Yeah. So this guy like works in the like future division at Shopify, I believe. Strange Native is his Twitter handle. And so basically what he does is he shows like AI can unlock unlimited product photography. So basically you could take a generic image. So like the left image here is just a shoe on grass. It's not a particularly good, it's like kind of a glare. It's on grass. It looks like you didn't put a lot of effort in, you know, you just went out in your backyard or a soccer field and took this picture. And then you could just say, make this shoe look epic. And then it takes that shoe, cuts out the background, puts it on, and it automatically puts it on this like lightning background or whatever. But like, look at the other example. So like that second example, I think is better. Look at the training image. So it's a dude taking a selfie in this hoodie and it looks okay. I mean, actually it doesn't look okay. It looks bad. You can't use this on your website for e-commerce. And then it generates a model like studio looking photo of this same hoodie. This one is kind of unbelievable to me. This is that good. Where it's like, dude, if I could just take me wearing some crappy, me wearing my product and like, don't care about the lighting, don't care about the background, don't care if I have my hair done that day. And it'll just generate, like, it gave this dude pecs and it gave him like, you know, better shoulders and like a jawline and like, you know, it fixed the lighting and it put him on a background image and like, what the hell is it? But it gave him matching
pants. How do I use this?
You just click like on the tweet for now. I don't think you can use this yet. I think this is like proof of concept. I don't think this one's like a product yet. I could be wrong, but I think a lot of these are like, they're doing demos, training models just to see what happens.
This is crazy.
And then
to me,
some of them, they open source the codes, right? Here's this photo of this chair. Oh, wow. Put this chair in like this epic thing. So there's this, and then there's this woman doing this thing called Osmosis, which I think is more of a real product. Let me give you the link to this. Mickey Friedman is her name. So what she's doing is basically you give it like an image and then you say, turn this into an ad, and it'll turn it into Facebook ad creative for you by turning it into a video, making it look cooler, that sort of thing. Now, again, I haven't tested these products for real to see if it's like any good or not, but the concepts are good. And whether these exact products are the ones that do it, someone's going to do it because all these are really valuable business use cases. That like, if I could do this, now a process that's costing me 10 grand a month cost me
just cost $29 a month.
Yeah, $29.99 a month, and it's instantaneous and it's better. Now you're 10 times faster, 10 times cheaper, and 10 times better. And like that's the makings of like those are billion-dollar companies when they do that. And so that's really exciting.
This is just 100% frame breaking, is what it is. When I see this stuff, it's just like I just got a little peek into the future.
And so then there's
and,
like,
and by the way, this is still super early. These products work, but so few. There's a lot of people, hundreds of thousands and millions of people who know and care about this. But comparatively to how much of an impact this is going to have, we're no one knows about it.
So check this guy out. So I just talked to these guys yesterday, young guys. I want to invest in them, but I didn't love their idea. So check out this guy. I'm going to send you a link. So I'm going to send you this link, but in the meantime, you should hear me out. So these guys, basically, they're young guys. One guy started a company out of college, raised a little money, didn't end up working out, failed. And he's like, then I was just thinking about what to do next. I was kind of joining these different communities. And he's like, then I met Hugh through TikTok. I was like, how'd you guys meet? I always ask every co-founder pair, how'd you guys meet? He goes, we met through TikTok. I was like, you met through TikTok? God. Kids meet through TikTok nowadays? You do YouTube? What? So he's like, yeah, Hugh has been making Jarvis. So I don't know if you've seen the movie Iron Man, but basically in Iron Man, I guess I haven't seen it. So, but it's like, you know, there's a AI assistant who he like talks to and like takes care of shit. So this guy for the last year has been building in public on TikTok, trying to create Jarvis, like trying to create the real life Jarvis on TikTok. And he's got like a million followers on TikTok as he's been building this. So they met through this process and they decided to like create an AI company together that actually like does, you know, some version of this. And one of the things that they made, or the first thing that they made, is this thing called Carter. And what they're doing with Carter is they're like, you know, in games, you walk around, there's just like, you know, you walk into the store, it's Grand Theft Auto, and there's like a guy working at the store. And they call these NPCs, non-playable characters. It's just like a character that's in the game so that the game's not empty, but they don't do much. You can just like punch them or like talk to them. They say the same three words. So what these guys started off doing was saying, hey, any game developer who wants their characters in game to actually just be able to talk using like AI, just plug this like line of code in and all of your non-playable characters will all of a sudden be like able to hold conversations with the players, chit chat back and forth, do all the stuff we've been showing that like, you know, the AI, Joe Rogan AI, Steve Jobs thing, like just like hold a full conversation as long as you want or guide the player to go do something like, hey, I'm looking for the sword. They're like, well, if it's the sword you seek, you should go check behind the waterfall. You know, maybe there's some answers there for you. And like it guides you automatically. You don't have to hard code that response because if the player asks for something else, they'll say something else, but like kind of guide them towards that answer. I don't know if it all works yet. It's like in beta or whatever. And I don't love this use case, but it is a cool use case. It's a cool idea of like, oh yeah, I guess in the future games, just these like stock characters that are walking around are going to not just be like random objects. They're going to actually be like things you can interact with, which will change the way that the games work. Like you'll be able to spend hours and hours in the games.
This guy Hugh just retweeted a tweet from this guy named Alex Wang, who's the CEO of Scale AI, which I don't even know what entirely Scale AI is, other than it's like a $10 billion software company. And so
labeling data. It's like to make your machine learning smarter, you need to label data. Let's say you're a self-driving car company. You need to like look at a million images and point out what was a shadow versus a dog crossing the street. So they basically give you software that will let you upload your images. And then there's humans like, I don't know, the Philippines or somewhere, I think, that like will label your data for you. And you just pay per image, like 2 cents or 1 cent or whatever.
So presumably he's quite intelligent and he has like a really grand perspective because his company's so big and he sees lots of information. This guy Hugh retweeted something from Alex and he says, we're at a critical turning point for humanity. Children born today are likely to have more AI friends than human friends. AI friends are going to be more reliable, conciliatory, what's that mean, agreeable, and considerate. What does this mean? What does this mean for childhood development and social norms? We will find out. That's wild. I completely agree with him. And then he says, loneliness is an epidemic. It's on the rise and a real public health problem. This technology, when it exists, has a lot of potential for good.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm a huge believer in that.
This is so fascinating.
So let me tell you three ideas that I think somebody could build that are not in the demos we just talked about. All right.
Okay.
Idea one is exactly what he's talking about. And I call it, you know, some version of either the AI friend or the AI therapist. So there are a lot of people out there that would benefit from therapy. And there are apps that will connect you with a therapist on your phone, like, I don't know, 7 cups of tea or like, I don't know, Talkspace or I don't know, some companies.
you're like, I don't know, I'm not one of those therapy losers.
Yeah, exactly. But you broken people, you know what you use. So these companies are doing well. They make, you know, like $100 million plus a year. It's great, but it's very expensive. And so if you were one of these,
it's a cute little company. You know, they're whatever, like you need like a, they're, you know, what the crypto bros like you started using the word web 3.0 and you're like those web 2.0 dorks. Like that's what you have to describe. Like whatever is just like human, you know, old school.
Yeah, exactly.
Reality 2.0.
AI replaces DNA. That's what I believe. And so what they were doing was they're connecting you with a real life therapist who's licensed and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And because of that, you know, they've maybe take an in-person visit, which might be $150 or $200, and they turn it to a $60 or $90 a month subscription where you get 3 visits or something like that. I don't know the exact economics, but something like that, where you're paying a kind of meaningful amount of money, but you're getting it more conveniently than if you just went to you were going in person. And you also don't have the, you know, the stigma, the taboo of telling your friends where you're going. I'm going to this. No, they're just on your phone in your pocket. Well, there are, I don't know, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people who would benefit from having someone to talk to, either a therapist or just a friend, a companion, somebody that they can confide in, somebody that won't judge them, somebody that will be positive and helpful, somebody that will maybe offer good advice, somebody that will never share their secrets, and somebody that has, no self-interest in the matter. You could now provide that for like, I don't know, $1 or something like that, right? Like the cost and the accessibility of curing, you know, sort of like loneliness or helping people talk through what's on their mind and get things off their chest, that's going to drop dramatically. So AI therapy / AI companion and friend, I think is a mega, mega idea. I think that is a tens of billions of dollars worth idea. Now, I think maybe there's going to be a lot of competition. There's not clear like the network effects around that. But I do think that that is a very, very big idea. And I think it's very impactful. So that's one startup idea. You want to react to that? And I'll give you the next one.
Yeah, that's pretty plain and obvious to me. Like that's a pretty obvious, straightforward solution. That's obviously challenging to pull off, but like straightforward, and we could all predict that. So yes, I agree.
The next one is a little sexier. This is called AI Spotify. So what's AI Spotify? Okay, so traditionally, the music business has been like, what's a situation where people just like run into like a burning building? People just make terrible decisions. It's like a horror movie when you're like, don't go in there. And they're like, but I heard a sound. I want to just go check it out. You know, like it's like, you're going to get slaughtered. That's basically what the music business was. You know, basically you're competing. It's like everybody loves music. So you are competing with a bunch of people who want to like, you know, make it better.
It's like someone creating like a to-do list app or something.
Yeah.
The next like, oh, thing do you like pain? Because you're going to get pain.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you like music? I guess you like pain too, because that's what you're going to get, music and pain. So the second thing, so, you know, unlikely you would even ever break out of the like thousands of people trying this. If you did, guess what? Here's your prize, a lawsuit. You're sued out of existence, whether you're Napster or like one of the many, many music companies that came in between. Okay, you survived the lawsuit. Your Pandora, your Spotify, you didn't even get sued out of existence. Congratulations. Here's shitty economics. Because guess what? To deliver music, you have to have the rights of the record labels. They own the pricing power. And that's why, you know, Spotify, after, you know, like building the best in class product, getting everybody to use it after 15 years or whatever, like does not have impressive economics. It does not spit off a bunch of cash the way Google or Facebook or other tech companies are able to. Okay. So why is AI Spotify different? Now, basically you can create a really cool music app that doesn't have to pay musicians $1. All right, musicians everywhere are getting pissed, but you know, here's the good news. You know, here's what the service would look like. the same way interior AI was just like, you want an industrial look, you want a minimal look, you know, give me a starting image and I'll riff off that. What you're going to be able to do with AI Spotify is you pick, like, you could basically upload a playlist, or you could just like, you know, like pick a song that you really like Pandora.
It's just going to be Pandora radio, but they don't exist.
But these songs don't exist. So it's just going to generate a new song on the fly for you. And like TikTok's algorithm, it's going to learn, like, when you skip, okay, that was not good. Where did they skip? Why did they skip? What songs get liked? If you like this song, will you like this song? That sort of thing. So it's going to generate an algorithm. The algorithm's going to generate music on the fly for you. And then you can add crypto to it, where I would be able to say, if I hear a good song, like by default, all the songs are like, they're here today, gone tomorrow. They're like ephemeral. You don't get to hang on to them. But if you like the song, you're like, oh, I want to keep this song. I want to, you don't just get to keep it and save it. You get to own it. So you'll click mint. You'll mint an NFT that now you own that song. Why? Because it was your taste. It was your directing the engine.
That's crazy.
That created that song. Now you own that. And maybe it could split royalties with all the artists that like inspired that music. Or the algorithm just owns, you know, 50% and the user owns 50%.
Did you just come up with that? Or is someone working on this?
Off the dome,
got
baby.
Got that big brain.
Got that big boy brain. No small boy stuff. Just straight big boy ideas.
This is wonderful. I think, this is finally, you Web3 nerds are probably finally coming up with interesting shit.
A use case. We did it. No one believed in us. 10 years and $1 trillion, and we did it. We got an idea that doesn't absolutely make no sense. No, I'm just joking. But I do think this is a great use case.
Seriously.
Yeah. Joking with some elements of truth. But I do think this idea is really great. I think somebody should make this, and it's not ready yet. So for example, what happened was with GPT-3, somebody, you know, OpenAI basically like downloaded all the text of the internet to create this text generation engine. And then with DALL-E, they did the same thing. They downloaded all the images of the internet to create this image generation engine. And what these guys from the podcast thing or the speech stuff, they're downloading all of Joe Rogan's back catalog to generate Joe Rogan's voice as a voice engine. Somebody's about to do that for music. They're about to download all the music. They're about to go download all the music off Spotify. And then they're going to train an engine to say, hey, create new music. This is what music is. Create new music. And that's what's going to happen. And they're going to release an open source model that will say, would you like to generate music? Here's an API that will just let you generate music using this engine that we've been training by downloading all the music that exists.
Wow. Brilliant. Finally.
Brilliant. Finally is the best backhanded compliment ever, dude. You did it. You peaked the backhanded compliment. Wow, that is brilliant. Finally. Too good.
We're so stupid. It's like Beavis and Butthead made a few bucks.
Yeah, you might have artificial intelligence, but we got that real stupidity over here.
This is so stupid. All right, what's the third one?
I don't know. I lost my list. I misclicked. But okay, last thing I want to leave everybody with is there's this guy who's, I think he should be the Billy of the Week.
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
Emad Mustake. So EMAD is his name. He's the guy who is behind Stable Diffusion. So do you know what Stable Diffusion is?
No. I know that the tweet that you just referenced was talking all about Stable Diffusion.
So Stable Diffusion was basically an open source competitor to DALL-E. So OpenAI created DALL-E. It took over. Everybody was excited about it. But, you know, you had to get permission to even use it. We were asking, hey, who can get us permission for GPT-3? We want to get access. Who can get us access to DALL-E? Oh, you have to pay for all these credits. Oh, you don't know XYZ. So Stable Diffusion is basically
here's their tagline. Model. Their tagline's great. AI by the people for the people. Designing and implementing solutions using collective intelligence and augmented technology. They're like the FUBU of the AI world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Anybody who does
for
this,
us, by us.
Anybody who does for us, by us, generally they're full of shit. But this guy, I watched one interview with him, and I can confidently say from the bottom of my heart, after this one interview I watched, this guy's the real deal, Holyfield. So let me tell you about this guy. So he gives all, he's my Billy of the Week. He's not a billionaire yet, but this guy's going to be a billionaire. He basically, for Stable Diffusion, he put in $600,000, I think, to fund like the development of it. The company's worth like $1 billion already.
What was he wealthy from?
So the guy, he's born in Jordan. He's got like a British accent for some reason. He's like a math background quant type guy. You could just tell in like the first enough two said. Minutes talking yeah. to him, it's like, I bet this guy could say more than five prime numbers. And it's like, yeah he definitely can. So he works at a hedge fund. And he's like, I'm the quant guy at this hedge fund. I'm doing trading and it's good. Like it felt good to try to win that game. And I was winning that game. Okay, good. So he does that. Then he has this life change. He has his first kid and his son is diagnosed with autism. So he decides to take a few years off. I don't know if because it was the autism or just because he had a kid, but he decides, okay, I'm not gonna do the hedge fund thing. I just kind of retired early after winning the hedge fund game. Retires and he's like, okay, goes to the doctor and he's like, what do I do about this? Like, you know, what can we do when it comes to autism? And he's like, well, there's no solution. And he's like, but I'm an engineer. Like I have a problem. That means there must be a solution. Like, and he's like, no, there's no solution. He's like, doesn't accept that response. So he starts doing his own research and basically ends up, like, I don't know, curing his son's autism or at least making it a lot better. So here's how he did it. He basically was like, all right, there's a lot of like literature out there, like research papers, but if I try to read this one by one, it's going to take me forever. So he creates an engine that just ingests all the papers and does a semantic search on it and basically creates like this machine learning thing to learn what is all the research about autism telling us. And by the way, I didn't verify any of this. I don't know if any of this is real. This sounds a little too good to be true. But again, just judging the book by its cover, I think this guy's legit. So I choose to believe.
This is the biggest hedge ever.
In case like 3 weeks from now, this guy turns out to like, you know, this guy pivots to selling his NFT collection and it's like, oh, wait, this guy changed his name and like used to launder money for a living. In case that comes out, let me just say there's a chance. Probably he's just a super nerd who's amazing. Okay, let me tell you why I think that's true.
Just because he's a brown guy with a British accent is what you're saying. You said just based off of what he looks like.
And the vocabulary is stunning. So he's describing autism and he's like, you know, the way that he's like, autism is a sort of like it's a phenotype. It's like a behavioral description. And it has underlying causes, which is like, you know, certain body chemistry things. He's like, well, what causes those? And could we rebalance the body chemistry so that the behavior changes? And what he realized was that autism as a whole comes from many different types of these imbalances. And he's like, their doctors are correct that we can't just like fix it or cure it because it's a multimodal system. There's so many different like inputs that create this output. He's like, but on an individual level, if you can understand where in one individual, the body chemistry is maybe slightly different, perhaps there is a treatment that we could do, or there is a rebalancing that you could do of the body's biochemistry. And so he starts to create like a process for himself over a couple of years to try to help this. And he said in this interview I was watching, he's like, yeah, my son is doing so much better. And like, you know, he didn't claim like, oh, I've cured autism or anything like that. But he's like, I learned, you know, deeply, like, you know, what goes into these kind of like biological systems and like what we can do, you know, how maybe science is going to get better in the future using AI. So that's kind of where his AI itch got started. You know, machine learning and AI is going to be able to help these things. And so then in 2020, he's at a dinner in Davos, you know,
as British people with British accents and huge vocabularies do.
I had dinner at Chick-fil-A last night. Okay, so anyways, this guy was at a dinner in Davos, and he's there, you know, and he's people are talking about this virus coming out of China, and he's like, huh, that's the way they're describing this virus is COVID-19 thing. And he looks into it. He's like, it sounds very similar to autism, where it's he calls it a multi-stomach inflammatory disease. And it's basically, his main thing was like, this thing is complicated. And he's like, it was pretty clear right away that developing a vaccine for this was going to take some time. Like, we weren't going to be able to do this in months. It was probably going to take, you know, a year or more to try to figure this out. And even if we did, it wouldn't work for everybody because, again, this is like a multimodal system. And like, you know, these like one size fits all solutions are not going to work very well. And so he starts this like thing to try to help use data to help, you know, policymakers for COVID, like do a better job, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he goes through this process, the bureaucracy of like this whole, like, you know, dealing with these World Health Organizations and UNESCO and World Bank and all this stuff, you know, it ends up being too bureaucratic and he like, you know, gets fed up with it. And it just like sort of the whole initiative collapses. And then he comes up with what he calls his Promethean mission. Prometheus, the myth of the guy who, you know, sort of like gives fire to humans. And he's like, I want to open source all of the powerful AI and ML tools that exist so that they're not controlled by large private corporations. I like that. And so that's why the
for us bias, baby.
Like OpenAI is called OpenAI, but it's a private organization. They're very, you know, close to the vest about what they're working on. And then when they release it kind of like not to everybody all at once and all that stuff. And if you look at the charts, like Stable Diffusion has like far surpassed OpenAI. And the tweet that went viral on this was like, you know, OpenAI, meaning the actual open sourced AI, is beating OpenAI, right? So the people who actually are taking an open approach are crushing now the company, the private organization called OpenAI.
How do they make money then?
I think it's the same sort of thing. You pay for some credits or usage along the way. Like they open source the model, but if you want to run it, blah, blah, blah. I mean, who knows? Maybe they're going to have some like, you know, open source companies have these like weird models where it's like Linux, you know, Red Hat makes a bunch of money through services and things like that are not like what you would expect. He says he starts Stable Diffusion because his daughter asked him if he could do the same thing he did for, you know, COVID or whatever for art. Oh, by the way, in between, he wins this grant I think Elon Musk and somebody else put up this $15 million prize for who can basically create a system that like teaches kids in foreign countries, like, I don't know, I forgot what it was, like English or mathematics, for less than like, you know, $75 of total cost, something like that. And basically they created this thing on an iPad that you could just give to kids in like countries and they would basically like be able to learn or pass certain tests within 75 days or something like that. I don't know the exact specifics, but he wins this like $15 million thing, again, doing good in the world. And so anyways, he creates Stable Diffusion and or his company Stability AI releases Stable Diffusion. It kind of takes off. And he also has, you know what that thing, what's it called? Like a Fantasia, where it's like you say a word and it creates an image in your head. Or something like that, or like emotions have colors or something like that. It's like these senses are linked in your brain in a way that's not normal, or like numbers have smells, you know, the shit like that. He has one of those. What is it, Ben?
Synesthesia.
There's synesthesia, but he has a different one. He has another one, I think, called aphantasia. Anyway, so he's like supporting researchers and he's trying to give them money to like open source this thing. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to bring together 20 of the best engineers, like Manhattan Project style, and I'm going to self-fund this thing. And I'm going to like, you know, we're going to create, you know, a project in this space. And they created Stable Diffusion. And basically, you know, he self-funded $600,000 and got these 20 engineers to come in. And they created this thing that's like, you know, taken off and now, you know, valued over $1 billion.
Dude, isn't it crazy just how bold some people are? Just like, it just... When I talked to Ryan Holiday the other day for the pod, I felt inspired at the end because I was like, your type of success is awesome and inspiring to me because I too can work hard and like achieve what you achieve. And then I hear a story like this guy and I'm like, he just like that story just bitch slapped me in the face. You know what I mean? Like, I am nothing and I am nobody. And this guy is going to steal my lunch money. That's what that idea just bullied me.
No, he's not going to steal your lunch money. He's going to give you lunch money. And you're going to be like, why are you giving me lunch money? And he's just like, don't even worry about it, son. And you're going to be like, wow, thanks, dad.
Yeah, like this guy.
He
like,
just when straight I hear dads about us. This,
yeah, I just feel inadequate.
Yeah. That's actually what the week section is. It's really the inadequacy of the week. It's like,
yeah,
it's like, ladies and gentlemen, are you ready to feel like shit? Because I got a story for you. This guy who's younger than you, better than you, smarter than you, richer than you, did it faster than you, doing the same thing you said you wanted to do, but he actually did it. And guess what? He's also ripped. And like,
that's how I feel about Ahmad. Is there a world where he's full of shit?
Like I said, I didn't know of this guy's existence till like 3 weeks ago. So yeah, like, you know, there's definitely a world where everything I just said turns out to be like, you know, not true. Or this guy turns out to be, you know, he's like, yeah, I taught those kids math, but then, you know, they work for me now. And it's like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, why are the kids in Kenya working for you, bro?
There's like this commercial for a car commercial, and they're on the highway, and it's in bumper to bumper traffic, and this guy pulls off on the side of the road and starts going through this bumpy forest. And the guy in the passenger seat goes, dude, this is pretty scary. Have you ever taken the shortcut before? And the guy driving goes, yeah, once, including this time. That's like you telling these stories. You're just like, yeah. I know all about this guy. I just learned about him an hour ago.
Yeah, I'm literally like, reading it while I'm talking. I'm reading my researcher's notes while we're talking. Because I watched the interview, but I wasn't taking notes because I was driving at the time. And so all I remember is my feeling, right? What's the Maya Angelou quote? You won't remember the facts of what you're researching. You'll just remember how it made you feel. That's what happened to me. You know, I don't remember any of the words this guy said, and I didn't go fact check them, but I remember
Maya
how he made me
Angelou
feel.
Maya said that?
Yes. Yeah, her famous quote's like, people won't remember what you say. They'll remember how you made them feel. So it's basically that. I remember how this guy made me feel, and he made me feel the same way I felt when I heard Vitalik talk for the first time about weak at the knees. You know, Vitalik, when I heard him talk, Zuckerberg, when you hear them talk, like people who are extremely mission driven while also being slightly Asperger's and also being extremely impressive in their past accomplishments. And they're just very matter of fact about the way they think the world is going. And they're not trying to hype you up. They're not trying to sell you on it. It's like you asked them a question, they gave you their answer. And then you're like, that answer just broke your frame. And so you keep asking them questions. And then it's almost like the tone of their voice is sort of like, I said what I said. Yes, this is what I believe, and this is what I'm doing with my time. And yes, like, you know, yeah, this is what I think is important. And you're just like, you know, you just sort of like, you look stupid when you're talking to them because you just come from like, you know, it's like you're speaking a different language. You know, they're speaking a language of like being mission driven and confident and like knowing their shit. And you're just like, you know, me, you know, just being silly old me trying to understand what the hell they're talking about.
Dude. This is one of those episodes that we record, and it's like I have to take a nap at the end. I'm so exhausted from excitement. Do you ever get like that? You're like you know, like my dog, like if I like feed him too many treats, like in such a way where he like gets pumped up and hyper about it, he's got to take a nap just from the excitement. That's how I feel. Like I got to go like rest my eyes. Like I'm going to go buy a dad chair just to take this nap that I need.
I need to be reclined at a 34 degree angle and my feet need to be above my hips.
Yeah. At the end of this episode, I'm going to get up and make a grunting noise just because of
not from pain, just out of habit.
This is just so fascinating to me. I think this episode has had a lot of mind-blowing things. I'm eager to see what people say. I think that I feel just amped after. This is almost like a quit and dedicate your life to this topic type of thing.
You're like, almost. Not actually gonna
do
that.
Yeah, it's like
other people should go do that.
It's like when someone who has worked at your company forever and it's their last day and you gotta go say goodbye and hug them, but they're like all the way across the room. You know what I mean? Like they're like worked for you for like 10 years and you know their wife's name and their kids' names, and you're so excited to give them a hug and tell them how much they mean to you, but the couch is really comfortable, and they're just all the way across. They're all the way across. It's going to be at least 50 steps.
That's how it is. AI is all the way across the room. That's so good. All right, we're ending it on that. We're out of here.